What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started. You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
The U.S. Senate barrels towards a filibuster fight as President Biden prepares to enter the fray. Plus, it's time for Fed Chair Jerome Powell's second confirmation hearing. How will markets respond? And millions of Americans are out sick as pandemic-related worker shortages pile up.
I talked to one hospital that was temporarily diverting labor and delivery patients to other locations.
It's Tuesday, January 11th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. A potential showdown over filibuster reform is taking shape in the U.S. Senate. President Biden is today expected to endorse changing Senate rules to pass several stalled Democratic elections bills. Currently, most legislation requires 60 votes to advance, frustrating Democratic attempts to translate their 50 Senate seats into legislation. Yesterday, Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell debated his Democratic colleague Dick Durbin about whether it was time for the filibuster to go.
Less than 4 years ago, the senior senator from Illinois said nuking the legislative filibuster, quote, would be the end of the Senate as it was originally devised and created.
I will concede that the filibuster has been part of the profile of the Senate for a long, long time, for many decades. But what the Senate Republican leader fails to note is that the use of the filibuster is out of control.
The White House has ordered private health insurers to cover the cost of rapid COVID-19 tests. Beginning on Saturday, insurers will have to reimburse the cost of 8 tests per person per month or make the tests available for free. Some insurer groups are critical of the policy shift, saying it does little to address testing shortages, while proponents say it will help reduce price gouging given the high demand for tests. Volkswagen's car sales in China have slipped 14% over the past year. The German automaker sold just 3.3 million vehicles in the country after it was hit by the global semiconductor shortage. Journal reporter Yoko Kubota says the chip crunch is significant for car companies like VW.
China's Passenger Car Association also said that the passenger car market grew 4.4% in 2021 from a year earlier. So you can tell that Volkswagen has underperformed the market. Some other foreign automakers selling cars in China also saw sales decline too. For instance, Honda and Nissan. Meanwhile, Volkswagen's big rival Toyota actually saw its sales improve in 2021.
VW's sales were also hurt by production plants in China being shut due to COVID-19 outbreaks. And a medical breakthrough as doctors successfully transplant a pig's heart into a human patient without it being immediately rejected. The historic first was carried out by doctors at the University of Maryland Medical Center and could have major implications for the more than 100,000 Americans on organ transplant lists. Researchers will keep studying how the transplanted organ functions inside 57-year-old David Bennett, who'd suffered from a terminal heart condition. The chair of the Federal Reserve will today face a grilling at his Senate confirmation hearing, yet Jerome Powell is widely expected to win a second term leading the central bank. In focus will be how the Fed plans to tighten policy in order to combat higher and increasingly persistent inflation. For more, we're joined by markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Luke.
Caitlin, we've got some prepared remarks from Powell. What do we expect him to say today?
Yeah, so we know he's going to talk about inflation, which obviously is kind of like the main focal point of the U.S. economy right now that people are concerned about. And so from his prepared remarks, we know he's going to say that the central bank is going to use all of the tools it has to prevent higher inflation from becoming entrenched. We also know that he's going to talk about the labor market and economic trends and how the Fed thinks about, its policies going forward. And so through most of the pandemic, the Fed had kind of been watching the labor market and using historical clues of maybe when it should raise interest rates. Powell is going to argue now that maybe that doesn't quite fit with how they should think of things in the post-pandemic era and maybe set up the possibility of faster rate hikes.
And are there any particular points of contention that could come up in today's hearing?
Yeah, I mean, some people have been critical of some of the changes in how the Fed has been communicating about inflation. For much of the pandemic, they were saying that it was transitory, meaning that this would be temporary due to supply chain shortages and other issues. And since about November, they've kind of shifted away from that toward thinking that inflation may be a more persistent issue to deal with. And so potentially with inflation, the most elevated it's been in decades, you could see some lawmakers question, is the Fed really doing what it needs to prevent inflation? And so that's probably likely to be the biggest point of contention.
Okay, so not everybody on the Senate Banking Committee is completely happy, but it seems likely Powell is still going to get his second term confirmed, right?
Yeah, he still has a lot of support from both parties. And so a lot of the people who originally confirmed him 4 years ago are still in office. It seems likely he'll get reconfirmed, but you just have the possibility of more debate happening than maybe there was last time because people are really focused on inflation and what the central bank is going to do to stop it.
That's markets reporter Caitlin Ostroff. Caitlin, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Coming up, millions of Americans are calling in sick, causing headaches for employers and the economy as a whole. Shortages of critical workers could even make this workforce development a dangerous one. We've got more on that after the break. The new year was supposed to signal a return to work, but Americans are calling in sick in droves. As Omicron cases soar around the country, employers are finding themselves short-staffed, either because workers are sick, quarantined, or just worried about potential exposure to someone who is. It's affecting every industry and even critical ones such as healthcare, forcing hospitals to cut bed capacity because their facilities don't have enough staffers to safely care for patients. Journal reporter Ruth Simon has been checking in with employers to see how they're getting by, and she joins us now. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, pleasure to speak with you today.
Yes, I think everyone knows businesses are struggling with worker shortages right now, but give us a sense of the size of this problem and how employers are coping.
It is really tough. You have businesses that are already short of workers, and now they're finding lots of people aren't coming in. We talked to one business owner who provides contract workers to hotels and resorts, and 30% of his more than 1,000 hourly workers were dealing with COVID, either from infection or from exposure. And I talked to a lot of other businesses who, day by day, the question is, are we going to have enough people to open up? And how are we going to make do with short staff?
What are employers doing to deal with this? What are their strategies to try to make do?
They're doing whatever they can. Some of them are shortening hours. Some of them are asking workers to come in and do overtime. I had one business owner who owns a bunch of hair salons, and he was about to close one location, but the workers volunteered to put in extra hours. Some of them are slowing production. Sometimes you go to a restaurant and they're not serving lunch, or maybe they're not open for dinner.
Ruth, you've spoken to restaurant managers who describe doing dishes because of staff shortages, but that kind of problem solving doesn't work in industries like healthcare. We've seen federal data showing more than 1,200 hospitals have reported critical staffing shortages between New Year's Eve and January 6th. With so many doctors and nurses out sick, couldn't this worker shortage be really dangerous?
It is problematic. I talked to one hospital that was temporarily diverting labor and delivery patients to other locations. They were treating the people who were already there, but they didn't have enough workers. You're right. There are jobs where the manager, he may not or she may not be so happy, but he can wash tables or bus dishes. But there are jobs where there are specialized skills and there's no one there who can do it.
And what about manufacturing? Because surely that would have severe ripple effects for the supply chain if a lot of factory workers, for instance, are off the job.
I think some manufacturers have had to slow production. And one of the things that I think is very striking about this current variant is there's a lot of debate about who should get vaccinated. But even in businesses where most or all workers are vaccinated and being regularly tested, they're still being hit by this as well.
And all of this is coming at a time when the economy is already suffering from a major labor shortage. Just last month, manufacturing had its slowest hiring growth in half a year. What does this all mean for the pandemic recovery?
I think some of this depends on how long this lasts. Some economists are saying this is going to have a short-term impact on the economy because people aren't getting to work. There will be some slowdown. But the question is really, how long does this variant last? And as important, what happens from there? Do we see another variant, or are we able to move back to what people thought they had in October, which was some more normal version of life? I think it's really hard to know at this moment.
And all of this must be causing a lot of anxiety for employers, too.
It's incredibly difficult for employers. I've spoken to a number of employers, restaurant owners, salon owners, who get up in the morning and they don't know how many workers they're going to have. They have calls in the morning to determine who in the staff is sick, who is well, who's going to be coming in. I talked to one salon owner who had 15 of his 18 employees test positive in December and had to shut down for 2 weeks. I talked to another restaurant owner who initially told me they had to shut down because they didn't have enough staff. They were going to open a day later, but it turned out that they couldn't open. And when they were supposed to open on Wednesday, they weren't going to be able to open until Friday. So every day is a new question.
Is there any light on the horizon here, Ruth? Are we possibly nearing the peak for workplace disruption?
The hope is that given the rapid spread of the variant, is that cases peak in the next couple weeks and then they decline rapidly, which is what seems to have occurred in South Africa. I know I spoke to one restaurant owner who had a lot of his staff out, but he was really hoping that he was going to see light on the horizon, that so many people had been sick that hopefully it had mostly gone through his staff.
That was Journal reporter Ruth Simon. Ruth, thank you so much.
Pleasure to speak with you. Thank you.
And finally, Chinese researchers have set a new record for energy generated by an artificial sun. We're not talking about a heat lamp to get through the winter cold, but a nuclear fusion reactor. In this case, one that reached temperatures of 126 million degrees Fahrenheit for a record 17 minutes. Nuclear fusion has long been the holy grail of the energy world because of its potential to create nearly limitless energy. But Journal reporter Jennifer Hiller says that for all of nuclear fusion's promise, researchers still need to work out some kinks.
The kind of nuclear energy that we use here on Earth is nuclear fission. And those plants are largely carbon-free as well, but one of the issues with fission is what to do with radioactive waste. So fusion wouldn't have that problem of waste, but you also have to get it to work first. Scientists have been able to get fusion reactions to happen, but it takes more energy to make that happen than what you produce. So the trick is not only causing fusion to happen, but sustaining it.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.